don't need no education. Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's a privilege to join you on this Saturday morning. And, of course, I am joined by my co-host, Mark Durkin.
It's good to see you again, Rebecca. Good morning to you.
Yes, good morning. Well, we are excited to jump right into a second conversation here with Catherine Kirsten. We've been discussing last week, and then we covered a couple shows in, I think, November or December.
It was in December.
Regarding the Edina Public School System's racial equity program. Practices that have come through their all-in-all plan. And last week, we kind of ended by talking briefly about the lawsuit that has been brought forth by the Young Conservative
Starting to Fight
organization.
Back.
Yes. They are starting to fight back, exactly. But before we get started, I want to go ahead and introduce our guests to our listeners once again, in case they haven't joined us in the past. So once again, we have Catherine Kirsten on our show. She is writer and attorney, a senior policy fellow and founding director at the Center of the American Experiment, having also served as its chair from 1996 to 1998. Catherine also served as a Metro columnist for the Star Tribune from 2005 to 2008. And before that, was an opinion columnist for the paper for 17 years. And Catherine has extensively covered these events at the Edina Public Schools as they pertain to the racial identity politics. And we are so grateful to have you back here again for a second week, Catherine, to further discuss this. So thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, when we left off last week, last Saturday, we mentioned the fact that these young conservatives are starting to fight back at the Edina Public School. And they had received a very threatening video that had been posted from some anti-fascists, the Antifa group?
Yeah, right.
The Antifa group. And they felt very, very threatened by the video and by other things that were being said to them during the school day, but particularly through this video. And they, of course, brought it to the attention of their high school principal, Mr. Andrew Beaton. And why don't you tell us a little bit more detail about what Mr. Beaton's response was to what they perceived as a very threatening video?
Well, this is all according to the complaint that was filed. These students who were afraid, and some of them were afraid to come to school. And I talked to some who said they would only walk down the hall with others and not by themselves because of the sort of persecution they were facing. So when they told him about the threats, according to the complaint, he told them that they had brought it upon themselves by criticizing the protest. On November 13th, and that the original assembly, I believe, was on the 9th, Principal Beaton called the president of this Young Conservatives Club into his office. He told him he wanted to see his cell phone. He wanted his access code, and then he looked at this group's private group me site. Only people who are on the list can see the messages. Uh-huh. And he did not like some of the things that were written there about the protesters. And the things that I've seen are, and even the things that I believe were discussed in this respect, were things like, these students, many of whom were Somali, if they don't like it here, then why are they here? That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But he said that as a result of this private message forum that they had and comments, that the club was going to be disbanded.
Oh, my
goodness. He required the president to end the exchange that these students had through their private group me. It was an unofficial club to start with. My understanding is they it's unofficial in part because they couldn't find a faculty
to sponsor them.
Advisor,
oh,
or at least
goodness.
Anybody who actually shared their views. Mm-hmm. So that for them also four students were suspended as a result of this.
For conservative students, not
conservative
Antifa
students.
Yes.
Nothing to my knowledge and in terms of what the complaint says, there was no discipline taken against the students who made the threats or the protesters themselves, et cetera.
My goodness. Look,
isn't it any wonder, too, why they're emboldened then?
Yeah.
There's no consequences.
Right. There's no consequences. Well, and I was just going to ask, do you have any idea at all how large the Edina Public High School is? Do you know how many students are there by any chance? I'm just curious.
You know, I really don't know.
Interested
in
looking that up. Yeah, it's a large high school.
And they used to have two high schools a number of years ago, and now they have one. I assume those were consolidated.
It's
a large high school.
It's hard to fathom that this group of conservatives, A, couldn't even find a staff sponsor. Of course, if there was a sponsor, if there was a staff member who wanted to sponsor them, they would probably feel that they were not able to do that out of the pressure that they're receiving from the All in All plan and some of the training that we know they're receiving. But the fact that they would only have a handful of them feeling like there aren't that many of them that actually think like this, as it sounds like a lot of kids at the Edina Public School are struggling with even being able to be honest about how many kids there really are. What was that? Oh, our wonderful producer helped us here. She said that there are 2,746 high school students at Edina. That is a big number. And when you consider that out of that large of a school, that's a huge school.
It is.
To think that they could not have a conservative organization is really surprising to me. Probably part and parcel with the atmosphere that has been created there.
So. Right. And, of course, if you have a faculty sponsor, you want somebody who actually shares your views.
I mean,
the schools can say, we'll find a sponsor for you. But if it's somebody who disagrees with your club, then that's obviously not helpful in your mission.
Right, for sure.
Combined with the pressure that's being put on by the All for All to make sure that there isn't somebody who
would
come along to
sponsor.
Oh my gosh,
even if they really did agree, they wouldn't be able to feel comfortable saying they agree.
Right.
So
we're
going to get to that a little bit later in the show, too. So a major factor that emboldens these types of behaviors from the Edina students, specifically the Antifa group, are the racial identity politics that are entrenched in the district's curriculum, as we were just saying, through the All in All plan. So if EHS's indoctrination can be traced in part to that to an essay that was written, actually, by English teacher Jackie Rail, can you share with our listeners this teacher's ideological motives that helped her design the high school's pre-AP English for 10th graders class?
Yes, and I'll tell you that Jackie Rail was Minnesota's Teacher of the Year in 2012.
Really?
And when I look at the website of the Teacher of the Year organization, the national group, this is a highly ideological group I discovered. So I think you can only hold one politics to receive that honor. But she was very much taken with the Pacific Educational Group, which had served as a diversity consultant to the Edina schools, and she drank deeply of their waters, and she and others in the English department decided that they wanted a course that would essentially be required of all students and early in the high school careers, the 10th grade course, and that they wanted that course to serve as a vehicle for bringing racial identity politics to students. And that's what they did. So there's an essay that she wrote for a publication that the Pacific Educational Group put out, in which is about a 5-page essay, I think. In it, she describes exactly what they did, what they intended to do. She talks about how kids had to come to see their white privilege, the limitations on their life that white privilege imposed. They should obviously come to see themselves as needing to confess their guilt for the oppression of people of color. And then they were supposed to start telling their own racial awakening stories. And in this, in class, and in this, wow. In this essay, she talks about how at first the kids resisted, but as you know, the year went on, more and more they began to think of themselves as white or as black first and foremost. Is a very troubling essay.
And to think that she sees it as a good thing, you know, we talked about that briefly on the show last week too, that to think that it's good to see ourselves first as some type of a racial class or a gender class versus a unified whole. I mean, it's the beginning of the end for this country if that's the path that we're going to take. And yeah. We have to be unified around our common ideals and our common values. And to separate people in this manner, of course she's going to see that happen over the course of the class because she's the one that's teaching it and right. You know, kind of forcing it on them. It's one of those things where you better come up with your racial awakening story or you might not get the grade.
If you want an A. Yeah.
Right.
And you look at, when you look at the themes that all students had to, every class had to reflect for the whole year, they're all themes that contribute to this. Of course, the books they read largely are contemporary books that lend themselves to an interpretation through, you know, the lens of race, class, and gender. In fact, one of the four themes is social constructions of race, class, and gender. So the readings are carefully chosen in order to push a certain point mm-hmm. of view. And even where things look neutral. For example, there's a field trip at that time to Fort Snelling mm-hmm. On the part of these classes. You read a little farther, you see that they're going to go there to view Fort Snelling as in terms of Dakota genocide and the use of the fort as a concentration camp. You know, so much for the Civil War. And
yeah. Oh, my goodness. Did not realize that. So I want to remind our listeners, too, who might be listening in and didn't hear last week's show, that this whole conversation is around Edina Public Schools putting forth a racial equity curriculum because they're trying to ostensibly close the education achievement gap between blacks, Hispanics, and whites. And no conversation around what does poverty, family structure, and all of these things have to do with the achievement gaps. And assuming that it is about white supremacy that is causing the achievement gap. And that's the reason why they're moving forward with these practices.
I just want to make one point, too. Do you remember in our previous discussion last month, we talked about how the test scores were actually dropping
right.
off? But what's interesting about mm-hmm. it is for the Asian students, they've been basically remaining the same. So mm-hmm. it almost seems like, you know, though they're a different race, they're kind of outside the scope of the tension that's going on between the ideology that seems to want to pit white mm-hmm. against black. Is that correct? Does that come across?
Yeah, that is. And people like these diversity consultants are really uncomfortable. They don't know what to do with Asian students
yeah.
because they qualify as, quote, people of color, right?
Right.
So that means they should be oppressed. But in fact, across the nation and here in Edina as well, Asian students as a group do best
yes.
on academic tests. They do better than white students. They're disciplined less than white students. So they don't fit the mold. Mm-hmm. And these pig type groups are very uncomfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't fit their
narrative.
Exactly. Yeah. So in addition to curriculum, the racial identity politics continues to shape professional development for teachers and staff members in Edina as well. So people may not know that racial equity training also extends to bus drivers. Can you explain for our listeners, Catherine, the specifics of this training and also describe the sample training that have bus drivers and other Edina Public School employees feeling like they're undergoing re-education tactics that are not typically seen in a free republic like the United States?
Right. Yes, that's true. Well, that's one of the ground rules of this Pacific Educational Group and many similar groups that everybody associated with a school district has to go through this, you know, basically brainwashing. And I'm talking about the school board, from what I understand, and, of course, teachers, paraprofessionals, but including bus drivers, people who work in the cafeteria, custodians, et cetera. And that's what has happened in Edina. I talked to a bus driver the other day who had been compelled to attend three of these trainings. We really got at Center of the American Experiment a close-up look at this training as it applied to bus drivers back in 2012 when the All for All plan was in the process of being adopted. And this training was called Edina School District Equity and Racial Justice Training, Moving from a Diversity to a Social Justice Lens. And the bus driver I talked to about this, who was there at this session, said that all the bus drivers' eyes were rolling and they were so uncomfortable. They were miserable. She wanted to speak up and raise objections. They all said, no, 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 just be quiet. Yeah. And they just endure this.
Endured it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then again, it's here we are in the United States where we consider ourselves, well, we are a republic, a free republic. And how many people really understand that these type of re-education types of tactics are happening in school districts across America? I know that PEG group also worked with the St. Paul Public Schools, and we covered that scenario that led to so much trouble with discipline in the St. Paul Public Schools. These types of retraining programs, again, I'm still so appalled that there isn't more of an outcry against it. Are people afraid to speak up?
Well, I think people can actually lose their jobs. In fact, we got a hold of this full curriculum for the bus driver training because the widow of a bus driver who'd been forced to endure it kept it after he died and sent it to us. So we have the whole 25-page curriculum that was used, and that's apparently cool. Her husband, she says, told her that if you resisted at all, you could be compelled to take the whole thing again. I mean, you could, you know, technically lose your job, but to give listeners an idea of the kinds of things that were said in this, the trainers, I'm just reading here, trainers instructed bus drivers that, quote, dismantling white privilege is the core of our work as white folks. This work will require a major paradigm shift in the thinking of white people. And then they went on to present this equation that is supposed to explain the whole world. And the equation is whiteness equals white privilege plus white supremacy. And you got it. You basically memorize this. You have to do role playing, you know, to act out all you've learned in order to pass muster in this course.
Wow. You know, and I just want to kind of take a step back from that for a moment. You know, I have no doubt that there is privilege in our country, but I wouldn't put it associated with just a certain race. Comes down to, did you have a home where you were loved? Did you have access to an excellent education?
Right.
Did you have access to parents who modeled, you know, responsible behavior for you? I mean, there's a lot of reason for privilege that we are wise to take a step back and recognize. But to put it all in terms of white versus black, that sounds to me as though there is no other privilege other than the fact that you are white. Well, that's absurd.
Right.
There are a lot of poor white people who are not privileged, who are really struggling in life. Look at Appalachia. And so this seems like such a, I don't know, such a weak,
it's really
not
painting
very
with a broad brush, taking any other factors into consideration.
Right, yes. And I'm just finding it so hard to believe that this is kind of the approach that is being taken through by this organization such as PEG and others across the nation.
Right.
I mean, right. Well, it actually really harms Black and Hispanic students. You know, if you teach them, you are oppressed by this evil monstrosity. I think in in this bus driver training, they call it, what is it, like Big Whitey, Super Whitey, something like that, this giant authoritarian structure. So no matter what you do, you're always going to be held down. You begin to think of yourself reflexively as a victim. And what could be more harmful if you're a young person trying to, you know, work his way out of poverty? Or
right.
Why even try?
Right.
Because you're going to be kicked back down by Big Whitey.
Yeah, it does. It takes away hope rather than empowering.
Exactly.
It's
right.
The opposite. It has the opposite effect.
But it also then strengthens the hands of those who are trying to control the narrative. And we talked earlier mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. the culture, you know, this Marxist thought being of oppressor versus the oppressed. Mm-hmm. Isn't it funny how they're essentially sitting in the seat of oppressor
yes.
by devaluing the human being so that they can control and oppress
mm-hmm.
them?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's a really interesting
point.
That's
a very good way to put it.
mm-hmm. That yeah. is. That was very well said.
They're basically yeah. living out what they argue is going on in the country right now because of the white person.
Right.
But it's yet this ideology that really causes them to be the oppressor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of got this twisted, perverted Christian sort of impulse at its base that is to say, you know, I'm a sinner, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm better than you because I'm saved since I recognize my own white privilege.
Right.
And therefore,
right.
I should have power over all the rest of you sinners because you don't get it yet.
Yeah. That's a very interesting way to put it as well.
You know,
yeah.
a crucial piece to the original training session that we're talking about here, which is the Edina School District Equity and Racial Justice Training. This took place, I believe, back in 2012. And it includes a bizarre history lesson entitled The Invention of the White Race.
Invention.
The invention of the white race. So if you could
right.
explain really this preposterous claim and how is it really intended to justify the power equation at the heart of the Edina School District's racial equity ideology?
Right. Well, this is at the heart of racial identity politics. The idea that that everything is about power, right? There wasn't really a white race before there was a need for white people to come together to basically kick down people of color. So essentially the whole idea of the white race was invented in the 18th and 19th centuries, they say. And the idea is that white people, poor white people, were basically told that they were members of this white race so that they would feel better than people of color. And it just kind of spins out of control in that way. But it's meant to prop up, as I said, this kind of power equation, which these bus drivers were forced to learn that whiteness equals white privilege plus white supremacy. So they have definition of each one of these terms, and then as a bus driver, you essentially have to regurgitate this back and confess your own sin as somebody who has immorally profited from his or her white privilege.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, when you think about white supremacists, you know, those are people that we think of as being extreme, you know, racist, you know, using the N-word and things like that. And yet what
right.
they're doing is they are normalizing the word white supremacy and considering it basically just living as a white person in a predominantly white culture. You are a white supremacist then, basically,
yep,
is what they're
definition.
Saying. Okay. No matter
right.
how respectful you are and how much you want to welcome other races into your life and into your business and into your school or into your whatever, you are still a white supremacist by simply not recognizing that whiteness is the biggest problem.
Right. And in fact, they teach that, Rebecca. They teach in this course, I'm quoting here, whites are actively taught, that's me saying, whites are actively taught not to see their privilege. No, that's exactly, those are their words. White people are meant not to notice the benefits and advantages they get as a result of being white. So even if you want to see your supposed white privilege, you can't because it's impossible for you as a white person. You're just endemically racist. And if you look at one of the other trainings that this same group conducted, you see that they say that white people are biologically different in your nerve cells, essentially.
Oh, my goodness.
And that white people, well, the name of this is a 2015 workshop they conducted. It's called More Than Skin Deep, Uprooting White Privilege and White Supremacy One Cell at a Time. They say you must change literally from the cells out to end racial dominance.
Okay, well, so, they don't know very much about biology to know that you can't be changing your cells.
It's really extreme.
Talk
You're
about
exactly
being scientific
right.
Based. Right. Well, and this idea that that the white race was created is preposterous. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's just so lacking in scientific evidence and proofing, and it's just, well, it's hard to believe we're even having this conversation, to be quite frank.
Yeah, it's a big
That's
mental
how absurd
pretzel.
It is.
Yeah. You know, the All for All plan, Catherine, we know that it calls for the recruitment, hiring, and retention of racially conscious teachers and administrators. Would you explain for our listeners really the components of the litmus test that is appearing, as you put it, designed to weed out applicants that really diverge from the party line?
Right. Well, if you are applying to become a teacher in Edina schools, you go on the website and you fill out an application there, an extensive application, which is clearly designed. Some of the questions are designed to identify people who don't share the vision of racial identity politics. And so they ask several questions that really, I think they intend to illuminate how you come down on these questions. Like, for example, one of them says, identify what isn't happening in education that contributes to the achievement gap between white students and students of color. In your rule, how would you resolve this dilemma? Mm-hmm. Now, the question assumes that the answer to, you know, why if there's this achievement gap is because of inequity in the school.
Right.
You have to have seen inequity in the school. And if you say, hey, I haven't really seen any inequity, I've seen kids from lots of different backgrounds, you know, kids with certain problems are bringing from the home, you can't say that.
Right.
Or it's hard to believe that you would be hired.
Yeah, yeah. That's the bottom line, is that you would not be hired. And again, I want to remind our listeners that this is a public school. This is not a private school. This is a public school. To have that kind of a litmus test is pretty amazing for a public school. Well, let's very, very quickly, Catherine, we only just have a couple minutes left. Can you let us know here what your thoughts are? We know that last month, the U.S. Department of Education announced that it had approved Minnesota's proposal for a new school oversight plan, which is required under the federal Every Student Succeeds Act. And according to State Education Commissioner Brenda Casilius, the plan is to help the state close its persistent achievement gap, there we are again, between low-income and minority students and their classmates. This plan puts equity front and center, giving us a clear blueprint for schools across Minnesota to meet that charge. So with all of the details concerning Edina that you've shared with us over several shows, what can we expect to see happen in Minnesota's public schools starting this coming September? And we literally have about 30 seconds for you to answer that question.
Yeah, well, this is code for racial identity politics. And I'm afraid that we'll see much more of what we've seen in Edina as a result of this.
Yes. And, you know, we so desperately want our listeners to know that my desire, Mark's desire, and your desire, Catherine, would be for that racial achievement gap to truly be closed. But we have talked about this on other shows, that the way to do that is not through racial identity politics, but it is to hold the bar high for all students and to give them the same opportunities, to provide school choice measures, to let kids go into schools that are actually successful rather than failing. So there's so many better ways to handle this than through racial identity politics. So, well, thank you for joining us, Catherine, and thank you to our listeners, and we will join you next week on Education Nation.